Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown. And the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
I don't know, we just got to get back to scoring. We just had a game where Cairo had all the points, and I mean, that leaves a sour taste in our mouth, but we want to go out there and score touchdowns for the team, the fans, the organization, which we need to do at any cost, whether it's throwing the ball, running the ball, defensive touchdown. Somebody got to score some touchdowns.
Yeah, man, because it's a talented team, and I think part of the problem or the angst or the multiple meetings that we're talking about is this team knows it's talented, knows it's good, and we know how fast things change in the NFL. In this group of players is not going to be together next year. Keenan Allen is not going to be on this team next year. You're probably going to have different pieces on the offensive line. I know that's not where we are circling the great talent, but that's the underlying reason for all of the angst from the players, which, Ruthie, I think is essentially a good thing, because they care and they know that they're good, and there's this sense of they're wasting it. And she is Ruthie Polinsky. I'm Mark Grody. We're from Molly and Hall on The Score.
I don't blame them, right, for being frustrated, as you mentioned. And of course, you know what you're capable of, right, when you're a confident, talented player. So it's just kind of, I'm just curious, where is this frustration targeted? And that to me is sort of the big mystery right now of, is it Shane Waldron? Is it Matt Eberflus? Is it Caleb Williams? Is it, you know, where is this frustration being taken out? And that, I think, is what, listen, wins and a good game, everything's better. Like, mm-hmm. Everything's fixed, mm-hmm. You know, but those two losses, I think it may have just kind of been a way for DJ Moore and others to release sort of some frustration that was building up even while they were winning.
Yeah.
And so, listen, I think that's the missing piece right now.
Yeah, and they're both games you should have won. I mean, obviously you should have won the Washington game. I mean, that's ridiculous that you lose that game. And then, you know, pound for pound, you are a better roster than Arizona, but you were pantsed by that, Ted. Yeah. You got whooped by them, no doubt about it. Arizona was way better than the Bears on that day. Let me read you the DJ Moore numbers quickly. Every game to game this year. First game against Tennessee, 5 catches, 36 yards, 0 touchdowns. Houston game, 6 catches, 53 yards, 0 touchdowns. The Indianapolis game, 8 catches, 78 yards, a little better, 0 TDs. The game against Los Angeles, 3 catches, 22 yards, did have a touchdown in that game. There was the Carolina game that Biggs referred to. 5 catches, 105 yards, 2 TDs. Everybody thought, okay, finally, there's mm-hmm. the connection with Caleb Williams. But no, the next week against Jacksonville, 4 catches, 20 yards, 0 touchdowns. Washington game, 2 catches, 27 yards. That was a team against which last year he had 200 yards and dominated, and they couldn't find him. Arizona game this past week, 4 catches for 33 yards. So let's ask DJ Moore, what to you is going on with you and Caleb Williams and your on-the-field chemistry?
I mean, just knowing who we're going against, the one-on-one matchups that we might have throughout the game, and then understanding on the back end the reads and where we at in situations where he's going through the read and how fast I got to be or how slow I got to be to stay in his vision, stuff like that. So, I mean, that's the little details I can think of.
Is there any reason why your connection with Justin was like immediate? As soon as you walk on the field and here it's a little bit arduous?
I couldn't tell you. I mean, just reps. You can say Justin had more reps than when I got here than me and Caleb have. Just him being a rookie quarterback, and Justin wasn't a rookie quarterback last year.
Is there ever like healthy disagreement between Caleb and you and maybe Keenan, like the veteran guys on the team, on how things should be done on an individual play, like him coming from where he is and you guys being veteran players? Is there ever that sort of debate that goes on with you guys?
Yeah, you got a little bit of that, you know. But he might see things differently than we do, which, I mean, everybody does. And we just got to find a happy medium on what routes we want at certain depths and stuff like that. And that's what we're still trying to figure out.
To me, that's the biggest thing, Ruthie. I think that there is this, and I do want to call it healthy, tug of war going on between a world-class quarterback coming into the NFL. Obviously, his merits come from college, but a guy who, in Caleb Williams, who is a winner, who is considered a generational quarterback, who is a Heisman Trophy winner, who has been talked about for the last 2 years. He's got a way of doing things that has been hyper-successful. So does DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, and to a lesser extent, Cole Kmet. So I do think that there is this thing. And DJ Moore said it earlier this year, like, Caleb getting bossy, and we're going to do it Caleb's way. I think that they're still settling that. It's not settled the way they do things, and that's where the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach and any assistant become really important, because they're the ones that have to impose their will and get this thing right.
I know that DJ meant that he and Justin, that Justin had more reps before DJ got here. I know that's what right. He meant by that comparison versus I had more reps with Justin than I had with Caleb coming in. That's because that doesn't make sense, right?
Right.
Like, they've both had one off season together. So I think, but to me, Justin was Justin. Caleb Williams is, you know, as you were mentioning, this highly, he's got things that worked. And I almost wonder, and Justin, I guess, had experience in the system before Luke Getsy, you know, because he was with Luke Getsy that season prior to DJ. Right? Yeah. So I think there is, as you mentioned, I think Caleb is maybe trying to have more command over what he likes and what he doesn't like versus what maybe Justin, and maybe that's a personality difference, but it's also like Justin Fields wasn't this highly touted once in a lifetime arm talent coming in. I mean, he was very talented mm-hmm. and athletic and
agreed
of high draft pick, and love Justin Fields. But I'm just saying, I think as Caleb, you know, DJ calling Caleb bossy to me says that he hasn't worked with a quarterback that has maybe expressed his needs as much as Caleb does. Am I calling Caleb Williams high maintenance? Maybe, but guess what? He's allowed to be as the number one overall pick and the guy that is coming in as, you know, as acclaimed and as, you know, celebrated as he already is.
Here's the other thing. Like, we're going to go back to Justin Fields. DJ Moore was it. Like, Darnell Mooney was not working mm-hmm. with Justin Fields. Tyler Scott was a disappointment relative to what we saw him do in training camp last year. Like, his regular season with some of the drops, and subsequently we're not seeing Tyler Scott involved in the offense much at all. But Justin Fields was so happy when DJ was like, oh, finally, I got somebody. Mm-hmm. Because it didn't work out with Allen Robinson. Who knows? Like, I still want to know more about that fade away from Allen Robinson and the chemistry that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. But that DJ Moore was the guy in that wide receiver room, and he liked that. He liked that a lot. That he was it, man. He was number one with a bullet. Now you come into this season, and you've got DJ Moore, you've got Keenan Allen, you got this guy named Roma Dunze, and you got this guy named Cole Kmet as well, Gerald Everett to a lesser degree, and some of the other receivers as well. I think that there is some difficulty with Caleb Williams trying to make everybody happy. When DJ Moore gets his 100 yards, then the very next week, myself included, we're like, what about Keenan Allen? Where's he? And then he has his two touchdown games. So everybody has had, each of those wide receivers has had a big game, but there is this, it's my turn thing going on. And I'm sure that gets in Caleb Williams' head. And DJ Moore's like, I don't care. I still want mine.
I agree. I hear you. I think DJ Moore is very clearly wide receiver one, right? Like, he has established himself 100%. at the top of that, 100%. All of that.
If he's not the leading receiver by the end of this year,
it's a problem.
It's a problem that the Bears will not be in the playoffs.
So to me, I hear you on the, you know, share the ball and everyone wants their touches, but DJ Moore needs to be the priority. And if DJ Moore is feeling frustrated because he feels like he is not the priority of getting the ball in his hands, then he has some validity. He has some validity in his emotions and feelings toward that.
Yeah, no doubt, man. And that is the wide receiver life. Let's hear now from Caleb. We just heard from DJ Moore on his philosophy on what's going on. Let's hear what Caleb Williams thinks about the issues on the on-field chemistry with DJ Moore.
Yeah, obviously it's not in a place from the past games, a place where we would like it. Both of us, it's frustrating because you got a guy so special and not being able to connect and hit on certain passes is frustrating for myself. And I know it's frustrating for him because as a wide receiver especially, you only get but so many chances, so many times the ball comes your way in a game and things like that. So I wouldn't put it past him that it's frustrating, you know, but we got to figure it out.
Specifically with the one instance the other day where you threw back shoulder and he was still running vertical, what did you guys iron out in terms of what you saw versus what he saw on that play?
I think it comes down to just talking and communicating more. We talk all the time. We laugh and joke all the time and things like that. But I think it, you know, talking a little bit more about and communicating a little bit more about, you know, specifics of you know, ways I see it, ways he see it, ways he's seen it. And then, you know, keep going from there.
Texter says here, Ruthie, that DJ loved having Justin as his QB. And I'm going somewhere with this. And I know everybody's like, stop talking about Justin. He did because of the experience that he had, as he mentioned, that Justin Fields had been in the league a couple of years already. By the time they were together, he was the ace receiver, without a doubt. Nobody else really needed the ball. I say all this to say I remember talking to DJ Moore last year on the record. And when we were towards the end of the season, when it looked like Justin Fields was on the way out, and there was, you know, the Bears are probably going to draft a quarterback, whomever it might be, one of the things that he said, and he wasn't singling out Caleb, this was a general statement, was no matter, and I'm paraphrasing, no matter who it is, we're going to have to deal with the rookie pains and the development. And he was kind of, and I'm using this word, he didn't, like, I inferred that he was dreading the idea that whoever the quarterback was, that here's this guy, DJ Moore, in his absolute prime, who has been paid, who at this point clearly just wants to win. Like, wants to win and get his numbers along the way. So in other words, DJ Moore knew this was coming. So if we're reading into some of his body language and some of the things that have not looked great, like, I can draw from that public statement that DJ Moore kind of knew that whoever the quarterback was this year, this was what was going to happen.
I think I may have been there that day that you had that conversation. And I think that was also the conversation where DJ Moore said, whoever it is, I'm pretty sure our guy's better.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean,
didn't he say
you
that?
You mean in terms of like supporting Justin Fields,
he's like,
right?
Yes. He was in Justin Fields' camp. He was 100%. Team Justin. And of course, like, when he's your quarterback in your locker room, of course you're going to stand by your guy. But that was an interesting, you know, whoever it is, you know. So I think there's this whole, you know, just, I think we all know that the Bears needed to move on. At this point, I think it's pretty clear. Maybe, actually, some people probably disagree with me after the last two games. But I think it's pretty clear. I said this yesterday on the Big Pro Football Show on CHSN.
Sick.
I said, there was no option for Ryan Poles other than to draft Caleb Williams.
Yeah, yes.
This offseason, if he wouldn't have drafted Caleb Williams, he would have been a massacre. I mean, it would have been riots in the street. Like, it would have been chaos based on the uproar and the excitement over Caleb Williams. So I think I hear you, and I kind of just went off on a tangent there. But to bring this all full circle, I think the DJ Moore frustration when it comes to what's happening now, I think when it comes to getting him the ball, he wants to win. This is a guy that wants to win.
Absolutely.
But I think he also knows that the path to winning is putting the ball in my hands.
Yeah.
And we've seen it, right? In all the Bears' big wins last season, DJ Moore was productive.
Right.
So I think that's probably where a lot of the frustration is. It's DJ's like, this is an easy answer, guys. Just give me the ball and mm-hmm. we're good. And so obviously that's a confident player that's saying that. And Caleb Williams, listen, I mean, a lot of our texters are saying Caleb needs to learn how to take the layup, right? He needs to stop. He needs to do less. And I think if he can figure out a way to just find the easy read, throw the ball, get the ball in the hands of your best playmakers. You don't need to be running around and scrambling and take your first read, take the check down, like see whatever you're seeing and get the ball out of your hands so that you're not taking the hits. And oftentimes that probably is going to be DJ.
For the Texans, I'm not letting Caleb off the hook.
Right.
Caleb struggled the last 2 weeks. He's been inaccurate. I mean, he had in the second quarter, that second quarter drive after the 44-yard bomb to Rome Odunze with the defense breaks down, he missed then Rome Odunze and Keenan Allen both in the back of the end zone, uncharacteristically, like going back to his college film, like the inaccuracies have been interesting and a little bit alarming. Here's what he said. Let's listen to what Caleb Williams said about specifically some of the inaccuracies that he's been having this year.
To what do you attribute, if you agree, that there's been some inaccuracy in the last couple of weeks with your game?
Yeah. You're asking what attributes to that?
Yeah. Why have you been inaccurate?
I think partly is been the same page and being able to find ways before, after practice, during practice, to be able to talk over a little bit more, to be able to get those routes ran in practice, to be able to first different coverages and things like that, shells and one highs and cover twos and cover fours and things like that, and how they'll run it, and most likely run in and you know the way there's ways that the wide receivers are going to attack the defense, and then I think from there that would help, and then you know some throws just giving my guys a chance, like the one to DJ down the sideline that I missed slightly out of bounds. Tried to throw him a perfect ball. Instead, you know, give your 7 year, 6 year guy a shot at making a catch.
Ruthie, it's just the same stuff. It's the on-field chemistry. Clearly, these two guys get along. You and I see them hobnobbing in the locker room. There's no issue, like personally, but they're still trying to figure things out.
Clearly.
Yep.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris, the Bernstein and Harris Show. Middays 10 till 2 on 670 The Score.
You can't really claim right now that they have an identity. Like they know where the, like, for example, like by 9 weeks, you should go, okay, red zone, this is what we're good at. This is where the ball is going. Third down and three, okay, Keenan Allen on a shake route. Like you can, I don't know what it's designed to do at this point. I can pretty much tell you what the Rams do and what the Eagles do and what Detroit does best and how they're going to move the ball. I can't really say that about Chicago right now.
Yeah, that's Brian Baldinger talking about an offense that, well, a lot of people can't figure out.
I love Baldy's
defenses
breakdowns.
Are figuring it out, by the way, Layla.
Defenses are figuring out because all you have to do is stop them on one formation and then they won't go back to it.
Yeah, back here on Bernstein and Harris with Layla Rahimi filling in for Dan Bernstein. I'm Marshall Harrison. Listen, the offense is wonky at best. We just heard Matt Bowen tell us that, hey, they had some good performances. And he said those guys get paid too, basically, in terms of the caliber of the competition when you're talking about Jacksonville and Carolina. Interesting. The two teams that came in together as expansion teams in the NFL and are playing like expansion teams this season.
And they got too much teal in their logos.
Like the both of them?
Yeah. I know the 90s are back, but it's a lot of teal.
But so we're looking at things gone poorly and you're asking yourself questions about Shane Waldron. And then you're realizing it's not just you and it's not just me. There are people everywhere asking. In fact, Brad Biggs spoke with Mark Grody, Ruthie Polinsky this morning. He says he spoken with people around the league who are confused, downright confused by Shane Waldron's offense.
The people I've talked to that have watched them play, look at it, and they see a series of play calls. Like they don't see a plan. They don't see, okay, here was the clear strategy. Like and people who do this for a living, like they can pick up on it, right? They could say, oh, all right, well, this was the opponent. Here's what they were trying to do. And it's seemingly more difficult to determine for these folks when they're looking at Waldron, and obviously what they're doing is not clicking with a whole lot of success. You know, you've got talented skill position people, DJ, Rome, Cole, Keenan, DeAndre Swift. There's no valid explanation for the inability to get more production out of them. Are you going to have one or two guys each week where you're like, well, boy, they didn't do a lot with him? Yeah, there's only one football, right? You can only use it so many different ways when you're getting 60 to 65, if you're lucky, maybe 70 snaps a game. But just kind of looks like a hodgepodge. And the offensive line issues are part of it. There's a learning curve, and you expect some challenges with a rookie quarterback. But I think what Waldron's done has been clearly underwhelming to this point.
Underwhelming is an understatement. Let me hit you with this. What's your favorite? Lay out to me your favorite breakfast, just the items that would make up your favorite breakfast, your ideal breakfast. You know it's going to hit the spot.
Well, breakfast tacos are pretty great.
Okay.
So, you know, a tortilla. Yes, I will also embrace a flour tortilla or corn. Scrambled eggs, pico de gallo, some cheese, a little cilantro.
You want those tacos, though, right? In taco form. That's like the perfect blend, right?
Yeah.
So what if I took those tacos and I put them in a blender, held the button down, let it do work, and say, here's your breakfast. How'd you feel about that?
I would sooner reach out to touch the ball python from High Noon than
I think
have
you're
that.
Exaggerating, but I understand your use of hyperbole
I'm
in this
dumb
instance.
Around snakes.
That's what I feel like Shane Waldron is doing with this offense. It's like you've got bacon and sausage and pancakes and biscuits and whatever you like, grits. Cheddar grits, thanks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All of that. And Roma Dunze and DJ Moore and Cole Kmet.
Strong ingredients.
But how you mix them up and come up with the layout, the presentation matters, correct?
Well, yes.
So that's what I feel like we're looking at right now with the Bears offense. And he needs to unscramble it and get it back to looking like something I want to put on my review as the picture on OpenTable or whatever website you would use.
Yeah. OpenTable, I feel like, is the way. Or Resy.
Resy
you
want
to deconstruct
well.
It rather than blend it to a pulp.
Exactly.
Gross.
It's like, I want to take a bite of bacon over here, then I want to have a fork full of pancakes here. You know, to each their own. But you don't want it thrown in a blender and then be forced to eat it. And your parents tell you, you can't leave the table until this is gone.
It is rare when we are all saying the same thing about what we're seeing. It's very rare. I think about the flack that I got for calling out Luke Getsy's offense last year and how people wanted to have their own opinions, which is fine.
That's
you can have
me.
Your own opinion. But we had differing opinions on what was causing the dysfunction. This, we don't. We all seem to be saying the same things as a collective media, whether it's Brad Biggs, whether it's Brian Baldinger, Matt Bowen, Tim Jenkins, we're all seeing the same things.
Cynthia Freeland.
The talent is too high to have that part of it be significantly debatable in this. Caleb Williams' development is crucial. We're not taking that out of it, but it's the construction and how these players are being used. And when you have previous evidence that shows that these individuals perform on the team, then it really makes it glaring. I think Matt nailed it when he said, look at how Sean McVay constructs his offense. It's like an arm slot in baseball. Your formations are all pretty much the same. That is the exact opposite of what you're seeing here. And the problem is when personnel and certain formations proceed to dictate your scheme, the defense is going to know what to look for. They're picking up on tendencies and they're going to take those options away from you if that's the only thing you're running out of that formation. If you're only running up the middle out of a certain formation, if you're only reading to a certain receiver on a certain formation, they're going to take that option away from you. And then what happens? Negative yards, sack. We saw a whole lot of that now, didn't we?
Steve Spurrier, by the way, he's only 79 years old.
Superior.
He might be available. Might be able to coax him out of retirement.
He's actually, after South Carolina, he actually retired. That
I know,
surprising
but maybe
part.
You can coax him out of retirement. You need a brilliant. He called him a brilliant play caller, and I remember him being a brilliant play caller.
Think about all the coaches
growing up in SEC country.
Yeah, think about all the coaches that he's put into college football who had offensive minds because of him. It's a big list.
So I'm just looking at the Shane Waldron thing, and I'm trying to work with you, Shane. I haven't even, but it's got to get better this week. And here's what stinks if you're the Bears right now. Here's what stinks about it. No matter how well you play this week, the questions will remain. You're not really solving anything this week. This is a situation where you can only do worse this week. You can't prove anything this week. You can only prove that you're not awful this week.
When Mark Grody went down the schedule with us and Ruthie Polinsky, Grotinski was the winner from one of the texters. Thank you for pointing out the obvious.
What was it?
Grotinski.
Grotinski?
Grody Polinsky. Why did we not think of this? Huh. That's why I need people. Thank you.
I actually thought of that, but you guys were rolling, so I just...
Well, I think that was very good that you thought of it, and you also get credit. But they talked about the schedule earlier this morning on The Score. If you missed it, you can listen on the Rewind app. But when he goes down that schedule, you're looking for a signature win to make you feel better about this team.
Like so far?
And when you say that they can beat the Vikings at home, if they do what's expected of them in the next two games, that would be a signature win where you're saying, okay, this team is going to get right. They have to get right Sunday.
Well, hold on. Forget about the Vikings. If they beat the Packers, that'd be a bigger deal than beating the Vikings.
But even when you were talking about what you think their record is going to be going into Thanksgiving against the Lions.
6-5.
That, including a potential win at home against Minnesota, that would be something that you could hang your hat on and say this is going in the right direction.
Why? You still can't win on the road. The next three games are at home.
Baby steps.
No, we know they can win at home.
But we don't know that they can win on the road.
That's okay.
They haven't beaten a good team at home, which is, I think, Layla's point.
Yeah, that part, the good team thing. He's also right about that. I saw
last year they beat the Lions at home, but that was last year.
And that was their biggest win. That was the one that mattered the most.
That's the biggest win of the Matt Eberflus era.
And how much can you argue that was a little bit of affecting Jared Goff in the cold?
Well, they also had Jared Goff's number when they were in Detroit, and then they blew the game.
Yeah.
That too. I think they forced
him into 5 or 6 turnovers in the two games they played him.
If Shane Waldron can get it together, they'll put up 40 points against the Lions. If Shane Waldron can get it together.
40 points against the Lions?
I didn't stutter, and I know your name's not Dumbo, so your ears do not flap.
Sometimes.
But yes. Shootout. But Shane Waldron...
How many times can I check in with you on that before Thanksgiving?
Oh, you check in first half, second half, first
quarter?
You're
talking about... There's not enough time in the game for both teams to score what you think they're going to score.
Did I say they were going to score 40 points?
This is a lot. This is a lot to comprehend. You threw that one at me.
Yeah, I threw it at you. And go back and look at...
Look at the Lions' average per game.
Do you want to go back and look at how the last two times they faced each other, look at how those games went.
It was a different team. I know that they were good last year,
If the Bears' defense is healthy, if Brisker is back,
if
Sweat is good to go, if they find a solution up front for the run game, it's a lot of ifs. But earlier this season, I said it, I won't back off of it until I see where they are heading into that game.
I mean, I like your hope.
It's not, I mean, is it, do the Lions give up points or no?
Yeah, just.
Have the Bears, the last 2 years, scored points?
Yeah, but this offense and this struggle.
Yeah, you're right.
You could have said that about the same thing about the Bears offense last year against them, though.
Justin Fields played well against the Lions. He did.
Right.
That was a team that he could play well against.
Yeah, because the running threat was real.
How much do they want to dial that up? We're getting ahead of ourselves, but I do want to check in on this opinion.
Okay. Well, we won't get...
If you think that they can score 40 against the Lions...
Yeah, we'll check back.
They didn't score a touchdown last week.
I gave you qualifiers. I said if Shane Waldron can get the offense back to looking like an NFL offense.
We should really celebrate if that happens.
Yeah.
As a show, we should ball out, celebrate.
If they score 40 points,
maybe we call up Second City Prime and get some steak.
It's called
or something
Monday. Listen, we haven't gotten to one yet. It's been a long time coming.
All right. So how did I paraphrase you incorrectly when I said you have not given up on the 2024 season, whereas I'm feeling bad about the overall picture and I'm thinking big picture. So reframe that for me.
I do think that you are well within your rights to feel bad about this season.
Thank you.
And if you, Matt Spiegel,
yes, sir,
Bears enthusiast, would like to punt on the 2024 season, I would completely understand. I would understand any fan, like any of the angry fans that I saw walking out of State Farm Stadium on Sunday, any fan within the sound of our voices, I would understand that. I am not going to allow the Bears to move the goalpost on this season.
Aha.
And I don't think Bears fans should either. To go back to what we were talking about earlier, they were promised jet packs. And there needs to be that standard of, oh, you're now in competition mode. Mm-hmm. You're not in rebuild mode anymore. I want to hold them to that standard.
Well, that's fair, because Poles said it was time to win. Yes. He flat out said it. And a lot of the roster things, making those trades in the last week of the season, the trade for Keenan Allen on a one-year deal, in and of itself, belies, you know, no, it's time to win. So for them to say, no, it's really just about Caleb's development and things like that, would be disingenuous. And you don't want to give them that.
No, I don't want to give them the out of, well, it's hard. Like, the division's really tough, and we didn't win enough games before division play. No, I don't want to give them that. They came out here with a lot of big boy talk about competition, about what they wanted to be and where they were at. And they had a lot of things to say about, well, you know, we're building this team and now we've got the quarterback. I still want the quarterback to develop on his own pace, and I don't want to rush him. But they thought they had built a team where you could just drop the quarterback in and they were ready to go. What they didn't do was make sure that their ducks were in a row from an offensive standpoint.
In terms of the line and the coordinator?
Yeah. Like, and that's why I don't want to cut them as a team any slack.
Well, see, it's interesting because I'm not cutting them slack from my perspective, when I feel myself throwing up my hands on the 2024 season. I'm angry at them, and I'm like, there's 9 games left, man.
That's right.
There's 9 games left, and it feels absurd to be throwing up my hands and thinking about it. I'm angry that that's where I am. Because you know what the other factor is in this for me, Lawrence, and I get where you're coming from. If you weren't really looking past, and maybe we're sort of aligned in this way, if you were just thinking about this year, then you'd make a freaking move or three. You would fire your coach, or you would at least change your play callers and give it a chance when everybody knows that Shane Waldron is not doing the job well. You would at least make Eric Washington your DC and put Flus, as you've been saying, back in the CEO mode. So they are saying that they're not doing everything they can to try and scramble and find spark and not give up on this season.
And I'm not foolish. I don't think that this is a Super Bowl contender. All I want to know is, can you work through your problems? Can the people that you hired, you should not give away more than half of a season. Because that's what they'd be doing. That's what we would be allowing them to do if the level of expectation isn't, oh, no, no, no. You did all of this destruction to the roster, all of this roster churn and roster turnover because of the promise of brighter days. And now that you're running into a little adversity, I'm not going to allow you to just go back into a shell and say, oh, well, we really were competing. It was, you know, it's a rookie quarterback and you got to respect the process. No, what you told Bears fans is that this rookie quarterback was different than every other rookie quarterback, and that you were comfortable with him taking over on a team that had aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to fall back now. You don't get to fall back after you've signed a lot of money to guys that deserve it and earned it, bringing in veteran players. The Keenan Allen thing to me is super important. You signed him for 1 year.
Yeah, you traded. You gave up a draft pick to get him for 1 year. And that's a go for it trade.
And you drafted a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Ideally thinking that the wide receiver was going to be able to get up to speed faster than a developmental lineman.
Yeah.
So I don't want to give them the out. That's where I'm at. I want to continue to, like, the level of intensity of watching these games and getting on them if they falter against Green Bay and Detroit and Minnesota. I think that should stay. And I know that there are some people who are already heading towards the apathy door. Don't. Stay in Angry Town.
You can't be mayor of both towns.
I'm not mayor of that town.
No, okay, but you like to hang out there. Hey, before Chicago takes on New England.
Couple drinks.
Yeah. Tune in Sunday from 9 to noon for your local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score. Presented by Aurelio's. Mully Olin-Kreutz and Patrick Manley will be live at Flagship on the Fox in St. Charles as they'll get you set for the game. Then immediately following the game, we'll have instant reaction from Wonderverse on the Great Clips postgame show. Presented by Sony Pictures, Wonderverse Chicago, and TimberTech Decking and Railing. All of it can be heard on The Score and on the Odyssey app. One of those men, Patrick Manley, joins us next. Woo-hoo! It's Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Bernstein and Harris Show.
Angelo Cataldi, the voice of Philadelphia for a generation.
Piece of advice. I worked with that man for a number of years. I'm still remembering things I fought with Marshall about that he was right about and I was wrong about.
Thank you for the kind words.
Don't argue with him. He's usually right.
Well, I just know that's where we are, Jason. That's where we are, and that's where it is, and that's what we have to work from. And that's the reality of the situation that we're in. Again, we're a growing team. We're an improving team. I know we haven't improved the last couple of weeks in terms of the win-loss column, but you know we have to continue to find answers and continue to improve to where we are in the season. And we're 4-4. We're halfway through. We got to do a good job of finding answers, you know, coming into the Patriots week.
Matt Eberflus, when asked about being 4-4 and if it's good enough, the answer is no. He knows the answer is no. You know the answer. I know the answer is no. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by our local Hyundai dealers. I'm Marshall Harris. She is Layla Rahimi. This is Bernstein and Harris featuring Layla Rahimi in for an off Dan Bernstein, and we're asking the question, what kind of 4-4 team is the Bears? And just hearing Matt Eberflus kind of just talk around it, he said a lot of not much, except for that they haven't played well, and they haven't been improved enough over the last couple of weeks, which everyone can see.
Do you think he's even said they haven't played well? He's talked about what they need to get better, but there hasn't been...
Not that he said they haven't been good enough.
There hasn't... Like, I need a scene setter from a head coach. I need a... Look, we're not playing well enough. Something that lets you know that it's not just about a specific play or a specific drive. I need something that lets me know how you feel about the team overall. And I understand when he talks about needing to get on the same page and this and that. However, none of that matters unless you show it on the field. And to your 4-4 question, by the way.
Yes.
The Rams, for example. A 4-4 team that's won 3 straight.
Is that different?
It's different. It's a little different, and especially when they've scored more points.
Well, you know...
I'm stressed out about this.
You have our thoughts on it. We will respond to yours in kind. Let's go to the phone lines. Again, 312-644-6767. Kevin and Bartlett, you're on with Bernstein and Harris Show. It's Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris. What are your thoughts, Kevin?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. So my thoughts on how I feel about the 4-4 team can go one of two ways. They actually remind me, because everybody going into the season, Layla, you said it before, you had them at a 10-win team, but they're not playing like a 10-win team. This team really reminds me of the crossroads the Blackhawks were in when they had Dennis Savard, and they fired him to bring in a competent coach with Joel Quenneville to take him to that next level. So in regards to the 4-4, where I see them either going down, staying with Eberflus, or they need to make the move and bring in a competent coach to take them to that next level. So it's up to them.
I feel like that's a valid point he's making. was that they had to bring in somebody else after Savard to get them to the next level into the playoffs.
And we've seen a lot of professional sports teams have to do that, where they feel like, we have the talent, this isn't the guy. The one thing I'll warn you about is, since we're skipping sports, the Bucks thought that was the problem too. How has that worked out for them?
Man, but that was not an incompetent coach in Bud.
No. I'm talking about after they got rid of Bud.
Which one are you talking about after that?
Bud won a title.
Exactly.
I'm trying to remember the guy's name. Who was?
Let's look at the list of the Bucks head coaches.
Who was the coach to start the season that didn't last? And he had one of his assistants quit before the season even started. That's when I knew there was trouble in Milwaukee.
I know who you're talking about.
Budenholzer?
No.
Budenholzer got fired. Even though he had a death in the family during the playoffs, they were like, oh, well, this guy can't take us where we've already been. And they've been terrible since. Layla, you got it for us?
Budenholzer was 2018 to 2023. Was he really 2023?
Adrian Griffin. Thank you, 773.
That was last year.
Yes, and he got fired midseason. And who did they hire after that?
Doc Rivers.
Yeah, what's Doc Rivers doing right about now?
Coaching a struggling team.
Yep. You can call him strong if you want. I'll just call him downright awful.
They're struggling. They have more talent than that record. You know it.
They got the same record as the Utah Jazz. That's all. Enough said.
They're 1-6. They also have the same record as your Sixers.
Yeah, not my Sixers. Whoa, slow down. Slow down.
You went through the process with that team.
Let's get back to 4-4. go back to the phone lines. Let's check out Patrick in Naperville. You're on with Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi on Bernstein and Harris. Your thoughts on 4-4, Patrick?
Yeah, good morning. You guys got nice chemistry as a comment. Yeah, so I feel that the Bears are in the middle, as always, of the cycle of insanity theory. A year after year, you somehow believe that a guy that lost 14 straight is your guy that's going to take most likely a first-round draft point last year and develop him, with the history that we don't have of developing quarterbacks. Do I think that there's time left in the season? Yes. Do I think that coach and the discipline, look at the number of penalties that exist and timely ones. We're not good enough to be able to absorb those and move forward. You went from, in one play, being 5-2 with the needle pointing up and a growing, struggling team to get its identity and grow, to the same guy that led a 14 straight loss team being implemented as the guy to cultivate a number one draft choice. I don't have confidence they're going to get this back. It's unlikely with the 9 games left that they're going to go 7-2. All right. So my confidence is gone. I don't think the locker room's going to respond well. They might get a couple of wins, as you've indicated, on weak teams. But that's my take on it, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Patrick. And you know what? I feel like that probably best embodies where the majority, as in over 50% of fans who watch this team week in, week out, how they feel about the situation itself.
Just because Ryan Poles didn't want to call it a rebuild doesn't mean that I won't. How much of that 14 straight losses are you going to put on what the talent was on the field?
Oh, a lot of it.
And how much are you putting on your quarterback there? And how much are you putting on Matt Eberflus? I think when it comes to the blame pie, as Josh Schrock likes to call it, I think the blame for that 14-game losing streak, Ryan Poles will take one for the team on that one. Got them the first overall pick like they wanted. So to me, I understand that it matters. There's no question about it. But how much? I think that's up for discussion a bit when it comes to what you're seeing. He's got a better team now. So what's happening with this team? You know, that's the real question to me. Is it part of the discussion? Sure.
He has a runway, Matt Eberflus does. It's not over for him. He can rip off some wins and get some things done and prove he's a great head coach. I've given the unsolicited advice that he should go ahead and just give up the play calling and focus on being a head coach until he can get this thing back under control.
Delegate. But
yeah, that's part of being a leader is knowing how to delegate, when to delegate, and how much to delegate. And taking things off your plate, even if it's temporary, taking things off your plate to make sure, hey, do I have a handle on what's going on in every facet of my team? And I think most of us would agree, the answer appears to be no based on what we're seeing on the field and what we're hearing from members of your community, aka the people who work at Hallis Hall. So I think that's where we are on that. Let's go one more phone call real quick.
Let's hit up Andrew from Streeterville, or excuse me, Streeter. Streeter.
Yeah,
Illinois.
Streeter.
Yeah, Streeter, Illinois. My bad.
It's a little far away.
Andrew, you're on with Bernstein and Harris. It's Layla Rahim along with Marshall Harris. What are your thoughts on this edition of 4 and 4?
Hi guys, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. And I think right now it's a very injured 4 and 4 team, and I don't know if Matt Eberflus is the right guy to take them back up to above 500 level this season. I think the Hail Mary that Matt Eberflus suffered a couple weeks ago is going to suffer the same consequences that Matt Nagy's double doink a couple years ago. I think they're both mentally done, and I think that Matt Eberflus cannot recover from this, and I'm just hoping that the Bears are smart enough to let him go at the end of the season and hopefully look for a Ben Johnson-type head coach in the future.
I mean, I think Ben Johnson is the hottest name. There's no doubt about that, Andrew. But I want to ask you a question. How devastated were you after the double doink that ended the season and their playoff run?
I mean, I was with a bunch of friends. I was watching the games with both friends. We were all celebrating. You know, never celebrate too early is obviously the right term for it. But we were all pretty devastated at my friend's house, and it was just we knew the season was over right there. There's no way the Chicago Bears currently could come back from it with all the injuries and the struggling offense, and now Andrew Billings being out the rest of the season with a torn pec. The run game is going to suffer dramatically from this.
I agree with that part, but I still think the double doink was more damaging than the Hail Mary in the middle of the
recency
season.
Recency bias, I believe, in the term.
The double doink ended the season.
Well, like, I think his point was,
that's
though,
why,
that
I
they
don't
didn't
compare
come
the two
back.
That much.
Like, they didn't come back from it.
Because
it was essentially the fatal
they
flaw.
They started 3-1 the next season.
And then?
Well, then they fell apart because of a lot of reasons. But, but like, no, what I'm saying is, like, that double doink thing, like, I look at that differently because that was at the end of a season, and it was, like, gutting. And this is the middle of a season, and they're trying to deal with it in the middle of the season. Like, they had a whole offseason to get past the double doink thing. It probably did take them a while, but they didn't come out. The Packers game sucked to start that year, but I don't think it was because of the double doink hangover.
I remember
know?
The double doink because I was watching with people from a city, the city of brotherly love, and it was a very different reaction. So there's that.
You know what happened in that game? They didn't run the ball then either.
Okay. Reminder, this Sunday, join the Score in Circa Sports Illinois at Jarrett Payton's flagship on the Fox in St. Charles. Mully, Olin Krutz, Patrick Manley hosting the pregame show from 9 to noon. Then you get immediate reaction on the postgame show after Chicago takes on New England. That's this Sunday at Flagship on the Fox in St. Charles, sponsored by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be when we return. Oh, the Bulls. Ole, 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 ole.
Oh, there wasn't even ole. It was a lot of Mavs things happening.
We'll talk about a team that was overmatched when we're back. More Bernstein and Harris featuring Layla Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mullenhaw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score on a lovely Friday morning in Chicago. Welcome to the audience for the Chicago Sports Network, where we simulcast every day, 7 to 9 in the morning. Thank you for joining us on your Friday morning. Time now to go out to the Arturo Hotline. And Brad Biggs is brought to you by the Arturo, your all-weather tire, Arturo.com. Good morning, Brad. How's it going?
Morning, Dave. What's going on?
Well, I want to get to the Bears. We have a lot of stuff that I didn't talk to you about yesterday when I was off. We have a lot of catching up to do, but I want to start here. Thursday Night Football, little debate going here. I know everybody watched it. When you are the Bengals and you come back the way that you did and you – watch Lamar Jackson do what he did in the fourth quarter for the Ravens. Great football game on Amazon. It's 35-34, less than a minute to go in the game. Did the Bengals do the right thing by going for two?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think, their defense didn't play particularly great in the second half of that game. I think you got to take your shot right there. I wouldn't second guess that at all. I wouldn't second guess that at all.
Maybe I'd second guess what your play was. Why not throw a ball to Jamar Chase, who did everything last night to get the Bengals, keep them in that game. But I guess you could quibble with the play call, but not the decision.
No, no. And that was a hell of a football game. And you watch a game like that, and you're sitting there, and you're just like, the Bears aren't built to play in a game like that right now.
They're
like, they'd get run out of the gym by the way those teams were playing, Cincinnati and Baltimore right now.
If Caleb Williams has 197 yards and 3 touchdowns Sunday during the game, we'll be happy and celebrating it on Monday. That was Lamar Jackson's fourth quarter.
Oh, I mean, if Caleb did that, people would be, you know, you'd have people declaring he's better than Jaden Daniels again. And so hopefully they can take a step forward, though. Like, they've got to, because it's just been really choppy, really disjointed, and it's problematic for them.
I think that I agree with you, Brad, and Sunday is a game the Bears cannot afford to lose, and Caleb Williams needs to get back on the right track. Let's start with Montez Sweat, though, because he spoke yesterday about missing last week's game with the shin contusion, it sounds like. What did you make of his explanation, and do you buy that it was essentially up to Ryan Poles and it was a decision that was out of Montez Sweat's hands?
Oh, boy. I mean, you're really trying to parse what people say when you get into that. Here's what I know. It was a bruised shin. This wasn't shin splints or anything like that. And going into last Sunday, I think the team felt like he was going to be able to play in that game. And all of a sudden, he wasn't playing in that game. I think you've got to, as a team, be responsive and listen to your players when they're telling you that they're not right. And I give Sweat the benefit of the doubt right now, certainly when you consider his track record for durability, the fact that really the only time he missed, I think, when he was in Washington was when he had a broken jaw, and then he might have come down with COVID when he was coming back from the jaw injury. So if this is a guy who you're wondering about his availability from time to time, I would look at it very differently. If this is the start of him not being around a whole lot and having durability issues, then we've got a different thing to kind of address here. But considering his track record, I believe he is due the benefit of the doubt that, you know what, he just wasn't going to be able to go.
Without him, the Bears struggled to stop the run. The challenge will still be great this week, regardless of the opponent, because Andrew Billings is on injured reserve. He won't be there. Sweat comes back, but you lose Andrew Billings. How will the Bears respond? What will they do to replace Billings in terms of personnel, or will it just be kind of by committee?
Well, I think it's got to be by committee. And they weren't necessarily playing the run great with Sweat. Like, not that Sweat's been a problem against the run. I don't want to paint that picture at all. But with him in the lineup, they had some games where you're looking at it and you're saying, oh, boy, they need to tighten this up a little bit. And I think the problem early in the season before the London game against Jacksonville, when they did a nice job against the run, was that they'd given up some explosive runs. They'd given up some big plays. And we saw a little bit of everything at Arizona, and it wasn't great at Washington. So they got to be better there, because you know, New England's going to see that and try to capitalize, right? You've got a rookie quarterback. You're going to try to get the running game going and take a few things maybe off his plate. But I would expect everybody to get sort of more opportunities. Byron Cowart profiles as that nose tackle. Zach Pickens should play some more. Javon Dexter's got to play better against the run. I don't think he had a good game at Arizona. He struggled out there. So it's going to take all hands on deck.
This segment with Brad Biggs, sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools, made in the USA for 100 years. Estwing.com. Brad, what did you hear from Shane Waldron on Thursday at Hallis Hall that makes you believe the Bears' offensive game plan will make more sense and have more success on Sunday?
It's not words. You got to show me, right? Like, I'm going to believe it when I see it. I would think Cole Kmet gets the ball some more just because that's been kind of really obtuse, but I would have thought they would have got DJ Moore really, really going and in a comfortable spot a little more consistently than they have, which that's basically only happened in the Carolina game this season. So you kind of get replies. I don't know that you hear things that you should walk away from thinking, well, there's an answer that makes sense to me. So I got to see it. I'm not going to put stock in what's said. They're going to have to show me. And I think for people who are watching it and wondering what the issues are on offense, they should probably take a similar approach that, you know, show me what you're going to do.
So Drake May comes in, Brad, and he's coming off a very good game. He completed 70% of his passes, over 200 passing yards, and he had over 90 yards rushing, the most productive rushing output in game for a quarterback in a Patriot uniform since Steve Grogan back in 1976, I believe. I wonder what to expect from Drake May against this Bears defense, and I wonder how will come out of the game if the Bears win, but Drake May outplays Caleb Williams or at least has better numbers or a more obviously successful day.
Yeah, I'm interested to see him because I went down to Chapel Hill and saw him last fall. He's good size. He's athletic. The rushing, huge rushing numbers last week, which would be bigger than you would expect. But watching him play, you could tell he could move around. Like, you know, his brothers played basketball for the Tar Heels. I mean, this is a guy, this is an athletic guy. This isn't some guy that's going to be stationary in the pocket. And I think the focus that, he's got is probably on protecting the football. You know, they realize that the Bears have done a pretty good job of getting the takeaways this season. And he does have, I think he threw two interceptions in that overtime loss to the Titans. And he had a couple picks earlier in the year in his first start against Houston, so he's got to prioritize ball security. And my goodness, I mean, he's throwing the ball to a cast of
they're anonymous.
Nobody's. Yeah, it's really something. So you figure Jalen Johnson will do a number on whoever the Patriots send out to that side, and then the Bears should do a nice job. But what do they have to do first? They've got to take care of business, stopping the run, right? Mm-hmm. They've got to prove that last week in Arizona was more of an aberration than a sign of problems that will be expanding and growing during the second half of the season in the absence of Andrew Billings.
Just curious, when you look at the secondary for the Bears, Kyler Gordon might be coming back. He's trending in the right direction. Obviously, no Brisker. Tyrique Stevenson is the opposite corner of Jalen Johnson, but where is his head at going into this game?
Oh, I think he'll be fine.
How about Reddy Stewart? What role does he play coming into this game? Are we going to see a lot of different combinations, mixing and matching, trying to find the right one?
Well, if Kyler Gordon is healthy and back in action this week, I'd be a little surprised if Reddy Stewart is active for the game just because of you know, you've got to have your numbers for special teams, and Josh Blackwell is one of their core special teams guys. And Blackwell had been in that nickel role, and they just wanted to Reddy Stewart had done real well in practice. They wanted to give him a shot, and that's what they tell them, those guys that are on the practice squad. You know, you work hard, see what kind of opportunity you can create for yourself. And it wasn't that Blackwell had not been playing well, that they just thought Reddy was deserving of a little time. But with Gordon back in the mix, I don't know that there'll be space for him.
So on Sunday, I imagine that in the press box, and I don't know how many people in the stands will be doing this, but I'm certainly sure that a lot of people who are covering the game with a credential will be watching the connection and the body language and the rapport between DJ Moore and Caleb Williams. Because I think that, Brad, how would you describe what you're looking for or why that hasn't worked to the extent that people thought it would?
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't worked to the extent that the Bears thought or hoped it would. And I think that's a real thing, right? Like, you know, can they get on the same page? And, you know, the receivers can be like that when things aren't going well for them personally, as well as the team as a whole, right? Like, if the Bears were putting up 32 points a game, I don't know that you'd look at DJ and see a guy that appears to be frustrated from time to time. Because I do believe he's a team guy. But, yeah, that's worthy of watching. But the only thing that's going to matter is whether or not they're able to kind of get going a little bit. These games where he's got, you know, 30 yards receiving, that doesn't make sense. Like, that just to anyone, when it involves a guy that just got a, what did he get, a $110 million contract extension? Like, the Bears got to be looking at this and saying, you know, what are we doing? Like, how does Eberflus explain that to Poles? How does Shane Waldron explain that to the front office? Because they've got this skill position talent, and they're simply not able to engage it yet.
And yet, as important as the downfield passing game is, I feel like against this Patriot team that was called soft by its own coach, you got to come out and establish your own running game and be physical at the point of attack. So, Brad, it feels like every Friday we're kind of checking with you to look ahead, and you're looking at the injury report. How do you see this offensive line lining up Sunday without its two starting tackles and now with a host of replacements?
Yeah, well, that's what hopefully we'll get a better handle on that today. And Darnell Wright remained out of practice yesterday. Braxton Jones was limited. And my guess on the show yesterday was that if one of those two guys were to play on Sunday, it would be Wright. I don't know that that's still not the case, even based on what happened yesterday. We'll have to see. If one of the tackles is down, I think we'll see Larry Borum. In fact, I'd be stunned if we didn't see Larry Borum in that role. If both of them are down, that's where it gets really interesting. You've got two options. Take Matt Pryor, who you've been relatively pleased with what he's been able to do at right guard, and move him on the outside and plug somebody into that guard spot, Nate Davis or Ryan Bates. Or you hope that Jake Curran got the butterflies out or whatever it was last week, and you plug him back in there.
Or spent the week in the weight room.
Spot. Yeah, and you're mindful of, hey, we got to have some chip help here. We've got to we got to be aware of this. Because one thing that Eberflus has said consistently is, you know, we don't like making more changes than absolutely needed. Unless we really have to. So that's a one-for-one. That's a Larry for Braxton Jones instead of a Larry here and move somebody else. You know, they're trying to limit the number of moves that they make. But that's an issue because they have to get, you know, you talk about the Patriots being able to run the ball for May. The Bears need to run the ball for Caleb. They need to have some profits on first down. I haven't looked at it this week yet, but going into the game last week, the Bears were 24th in the league on first down. And they probably dropped a little bit based on how they played last week. And when you're poor on first down, usually that's a good indicator that you're going to have a tough time on third down, which they do as well. So, you know, if they pick up a 4 or 5 yard run, I'm talking modest goals here on first down, you get into that second and five, second and six, and you've got opportunities. You're not going to be predictable. You're on time. The chains are moving as they should. So they've got to run the ball as well.
All right, Brad, how do you see this game unfolding Sunday?
Well, I don't think it's going to be an entertaining affair to the level of what we saw on television last night with Baltimore and Cincinnati. That one of maybe will go down as one of the better regular season games this year. But the Bears have what is going to be the first of many must-win games if they want to do anything. Like they have erased their margin for error, right? The last 2 weeks with struggles on the road at Washington and Arizona. And they're really kind of backed into a corner here. I think they win the game. I don't think it'll be super pretty. But if they put it together, they could beat this New England team by 2 touchdowns. They really could. I don't have a high degree of faith in that. I've got the Bears winning 20-17.
20-17. Did you consult with Mully on that? Because he texted me his prediction last night. You know, he's out today, and it was 20-17. This is the second week in a row you guys had the same prediction.
I called him the other day, and when I didn't hear back, I figured he was probably under the weather a little bit. And that proved to be the case. No, we have not had communication. All
right. 20-17. Bright,
I mean, sometimes brilliant minds do think alike.
Okay. That was my other thought. All right, Brad.
Well, naturally.
Naturally. All right. Thanks for this good insight, and we will see you on Sunday. Great prediction. 20-17.
Sounds good.
All right.
Have a great weekend, Dave.
Brad Biggs from the Chicago Tribune.